Welcome to Rails with Jason. Hey, I want to tell you about something. If you struggle with writing tests for your Rails applications, specifically RSpec tests, I have something for you. At my website, codewithjason.com, I have a whole bunch of articles on Rails testing that I wrote. Here's a couple examples of what you can find there. You can find a repeatable step-by-step guide to writing integration tests with Capybara. That's where I share my formula that I use every time I write a Capybara test that makes it pretty easy. There is the ultimate guide to RSpec and Capybara tests. And there's also mocks and stubs in plain English. These are just a few examples of dozens and dozens of Rails testing articles that I've written at codewithjason.com. I also have a free Ruby testing micro course that you can download. It's a 4-part course, pretty easy to go through. Hundreds of developers have already downloaded the course. You can join them by going to codewithjason.com and downloading the micro course. I also have a book called Rails Testing for Beginners. The book can be purchased as just the book or the book plus a video package where I walk through the book and show you everything in the book. Again, all these things are available at codewithjason.com. Now on to the episode. Welcome to Rails with Jason. I'm here today with Julian Farrer, creator of LearnDocker.online. Julian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
And I know I didn't pronounce your last name right. You know, it's funny. Your name is not like a long, complicated name. There's just sounds that I can't say. But I got as close as I'm going to get.
It was pretty close.
Do you want to tell us about yourself?
Sure thing. My name is Julian. I am a software engineer. I live in San Francisco Bay Area, and I made this course a couple years ago about Docker because I was kind of frustrated with the learning experience when I was trying to get into the whole topic. But at the same time, I was really fascinated and drawn to this technology, and I wanted other people to benefit from it and have a quicker, easier learning experience.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And let me interject right there and share that, like, I've had a similar experience with a couple other things. Like, a few years ago, I was teaching myself Angular and Rails together, and I was really, like you said with Docker, you were frustrated by the learning experience. I was frustrated with my learning experience with Angular and Rails. There was like no good documentation out there. And then more recently with like AWS and Rails, there's still, you know, I first experienced this some years ago, but still today, there are no good resources out there that really like spell out exactly how to work with AWS and Rails. And similar thing with automated testing. I felt like there was room to, like, I think when I got started, like, nobody really like spelled it out all that great. And so it's like, you would think that the internet would have like everything by now, but it totally doesn't. There's still a lot missing.
Totally true. And even if there, so with the whole Docker stuff, what I found is I found resources and they kind of gave me this, you know, quick tutorial, like a couple examples, like, here's what you do. It's like, great, but why do I do it? How does this benefit me? How does it influence decisions that I have to make in the future? And all these like connecting pieces of information were totally missing from all those blog posts and other types of resources.
Yeah, and they assume you know all these things that you probably don't know.
Right. Yeah. What is a container image and how does it relate to a container? So I know they exist, but how do I get from one to the other? And what are the concepts behind them, or the question that I couldn't, that I had a hard time figuring out in the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you all kinds of questions related to this stuff because I've dipped my toe into the waters of Docker a little bit, but it's like I would get a little bit into it and then just like hit a wall because it's like, this is super hard. I did eventually manage to like take a Rails application that I had and Dockerize it. And so that kind of worked. But I also didn't really understand what I was doing. I happened to use Docker Compose for it just because like that's what I found a tutorial for or whatever. But I didn't understand why I was like, why am I using Docker Compose? What even is Docker Compose related to Docker? Is it possible to use either Docker or Docker Compose? And if so, like, why would you do it one way versus the other and when? But before we get into any of that stuff, let me ask you this. Okay, so let me ask the very most fundamental question. What is Docker and when would you want to use it?
Okay. Docker can mean a lot of different things depending on the context that you talk about it. In general, I describe Docker as a container platform, which means it is a set of tools, services, and practices that help us with developing, shipping, and running applications using container technology. And that's kind of like really fancy sounding. Bottom line is that it's a tool that helps us to deal with containers. And containers are a technology that allows us to isolate processes on an operating system from other processes. That means that these processes that are wrapped in a container can have their own file system, users, process tree, etc. And they can see any of these resources that another container or the host OS that runs the container has. Does that make sense?
Maybe. Maybe let's unpack some of that stuff. So let's talk about containers for a second. I looked up containers because I was curious, like, what exactly is a container? In my understanding, tell me if this is consistent with your understanding or not. My understanding is that containers are actually something that exists independently of Docker. Containers existed before Docker existed. It's this thing in Linux. I guess I can't really explain it any further than that, but like containers are a thing in Linux that existed before Docker and then Docker kind of makes use of those. Is that right?
That sounds right. So the idea behind containers, has been very old and Google has been doing that for years. And these underlying building stones to create containers have been in the Linux kernel for a long time and just been enhanced over the years. And there's also other operating systems that have similar technologies like Solaris Zones. So the underlying idea has been, I don't know, probably a decade old now. What Docker gives us is the tools to easily manage these containers and to interact with them in a sane way. So you don't have to be Google and have an engineering team of thousands of people to do it. You can do it by yourself on your own machine at home.
And it seems like a popular way to explain what a container is to say, well, it's kind of like a VM. But the explanation often doesn't go further than that. And it's kind of not a super satisfying satisfying explanation. I've seen this diagram that kind of helps where it's like, it shows you some VMs and the VMs like, I don't know. It's hard to explain the diagram with words, but like basically containers don't go as deep as VMs. There's less that's like a VM is like a whole, you know, it's a virtual machine. So it has all of the stuff, but a container maybe you can help me out and explain this better than I am.
For sure. Yeah. So I definitely often heard this comparison container virtual machine, and I made it myself in the beginning. And I realized that's a big mistake. The comparison is pretty fair. Both are technologies that help you to isolate applications from each other and kind of give them resources and manage them. But what you said, like, yeah, a virtual machine is like this whole thing that runs an operating system. And in that operating system, it has applications and utilities installed and a service manager that starts other applications, et cetera. a container is ultimately just a process on an already existing operating system. And it is just isolated from other processes by using features of the Linux kernel. That means you can run multiple instances of an application or many different applications on the same host without those applications interfering with each other in any way. So they can have their own IP addresses, their own file system, own user security restrictions, etc. But they are still ultimately just processes on that operating system, and they share that operating system's kernel.
Got it.
That means, for example, a virtual machine, you can run Windows and Linux or vice versa, but a Docker Linux container has always needs to run on a Linux host. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Okay.
And just for the sake of completeness, these features of the Linux kernel that allow you to isolate these processes are called namespaces. So basically, you stuff your process into a namespace, and then there's a namespace for the process tree and one for the file system, etc. And theoretically, containers could share a namespace. So you can say, oh, these five sets of containers all have the same process tree, but this fifth container doesn't have that. It's kind of maybe a little bit too far down the road. And sorry, I got to mute myself.
I think that's good for now, for starters. So like my next question about containers is this. Is a container something that always... A container can be like running or not running. Like it doesn't need to necessarily exist all the time, right? Is that right?
Right. It's back to this analogy of containers are just processes. You can have the application installed on your computer, but whether you run the application or not is up to you. So same thing for containers. So you can start the container or not. The files that you need to start them can be on your machine, but you don't have to use them. Just like starting and stopping a process.
Can you explain for us what a Docker image is and the difference or the relationship between a Docker image and a Docker container?
Yes. And I'm going to take a step back to answer this question. One of the ideas behind Docker and containers is that they allow you to package an application and its dependencies into a portable format that you can move around. And this portable format is essentially this container image. That means in this container image, you install the dependencies of your application, for example, a Ruby interpreter, the gems that you need to run your application, system libraries and system utilities that you need. And you do that by creating this file, essentially plain text file that's a Docker file that describes the steps that Docker needs to take to create this image. And once it is created, you, as I said, have this package, and you can then take this package, this container image, and create a container based on it. That means essentially the container image provides the container with the initial file system, if that makes sense.
Do I understand right that the Docker file is part of the image definition?
The image is defined by the Docker file, yeah. It's a list of instructions that are executed by Docker in order to create the image.
Got it. Okay. That helps because I wasn't exactly sure where precisely the Docker file fit into the picture. I knew, of course, that the Docker file had something to do with providing a set of instructions for setting up something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I really knew the term for it before. Now I understand that it's for setting up the image, mm-hmm. or I don't know if you'd say it exactly that way.
I think that sounds right. You create the container image from the Docker file or based on the instructions in the Docker file.
Yeah.
So there's the there's like basically these two stages. There's the build stage in which you create the container image, and then the run stage in which you take the image and create a container from it.
Okay. And then maybe next we could talk about production versus development. Can you speak to like how do people typically use Docker for development and how do they use it in production, if that question makes sense?
That makes sense. I'm not sure there's a typical developer that does it in a certain way. The thing about Docker is that it's such a powerful and flexible tool that people use it in many different ways.
Let me actually ask my question a different way.
Okay.
What are some of the advantages that Docker provides in development versus some of the advantages it provides in production? My understanding is that one advantage in development is like if you're, let's say you're working at a startup that's like hiring new developers somewhat regularly, I have experienced firsthand the pain of having to get each new developer set up with a development environment if the development environment like involves a lot of stuff and manual steps and dependencies and stuff like that. So I understand Docker can simplify that process quite a bit. So maybe that's one advantage that using Docker in development has, but can you speak to that stuff a little bit?
Yeah, and that's honestly my main reason for using Docker in development is I work on a variety of different applications. Sometimes I have to touch an application that I haven't touched in 3 or 4 years. And getting these applications up and running again on my machine is always a huge pain. There's always something missing, and I don't know what I did last time. The README is out of date and all that stuff. And Docker just completely takes that pain away from me because I have this Docker file that exactly describes what my application needs in order to get up and running. I also have this artifact that I created once, which is the build container image that I can just use to run the application. And I tend to combine this with a set of scripts. I really like the scripts to rule them all pattern by GitHub.
Wait, what is that? The
scripts to rule them all. It's basically a set of normalized script names, and each script name does a certain thing.
Oh, okay.
So there's like a setup script and a start script and a test script, etc.
Okay.
And using this might solve some of these pain points that you mentioned. The thing is that if you need to support macOS and Linux, and then there's an update for macOS coming out or a different version of Linux being used, these scripts get out of hand really quick because either they get really complicated or they're out of date all the time. Versus if you're using Docker and Docker Compose, which we can talk about in a little bit, you basically get this consistent environment which you can interact with. That means my scripts just execute Docker and Docker Compose commands to get the application up and running. And I know that these scripts will work on Linux or Mac or even Windows if I have a Bash installed on Windows. And that I get a consistent result that I can use to interact and iterate on the application.
Okay. And what about speed? I noticed that when I Dockerized my certain Rails application that I Dockerized, I did it so that I could, why did I do it? It had something to do with running tests. And I noticed that when I did Docker composed bundle exec rspec, there was some performance overhead. Like I had to wait an extra like second or so. And so when people use Docker in development, do they do everything through like, I know you maybe don't always use Docker Compose. I don't know how that stuff works yet, but do people experience some kind of like performance hits when they're using Docker in development, or are there ways around that?
So there is a performance implication on Docker if you're using Docker for Mac. And you're using something that's called bind mounts, which is basically you build a container image once, you start a container, and then you want to mount the source code from your local machine into the container so that you basically get things like hard code reloading and things like that. So you can iterate on your application faster without rebuilding the image. On macOS, because Docker is Docker and a Linux container needs to run on Linux, on macOS, we need this virtual machine that runs our containers for us. And that's more or less transparent. Docker manages this virtual machine for us. But it still basically needs this intermediate file system that gets the files from your Mac into the virtual machine so that the container can access it. And there's a lot of performance overhead there to guarantee consistency, which is why it can be that if you're starting RSpec and it has to load the whole Rails environment and read all the files, it's going to take longer. And that can take significantly longer. I worked on this one application, huge application test suite, ran like 45 minutes, like 10,000 tests, I don't know. And it basically added a minute and a half of start time to the already pretty big start time.
Wow.
The good news is there's ways around that. One is you could just use Linux. That's probably not an option for most people. The other thing that I do is I wrote a little tool called Blitz, which is the German word for lightning. And it is a lightning fast file synchronizer for Docker. So it synchronizes the files from your Mac into another container. And then this container shares these files with the container that runs my application. And it's using file system events. So it's basically, if I'm in Vim and I hit save, I can immediately hit my shortcut for running the tests. And the files there and my tests work. So there are ways around these performance limitations or restrictions, but you have to know them and you have to deal with them and add this to your setup.
Got it. Okay. Well, at least there are ways around them. Now I want to ask the question that I've been wanting to ask, which is Docker and Docker Compose. What's the difference between these two things? When would you use one versus the other, all that stuff?
They are targeting, or they have different use cases. Docker as a thing you install on your machine is kind of like this generic suite of tools. And there's a Docker CLI, which you use to interact with the server part of Docker to build your images and run your containers and do all that stuff. And that's always on a individual image or individual container basis. So you say, build this image for me and start this container with these settings for me. That means if you have something like a Rails application where you maybe have the Puma running for the front end and you have a Sidekick worker and you have a database and Redis and maybe a Solr and all that stuff, you would need to manage all these containers individually by saying Docker container run my Rails front end, Docker container run Solr, Docker container run Redis, and kind of connect all of these, which is really tedious and error prone, obviously. And Docker Compose adds a layer of abstraction around that by giving you the option to describe your whole application in a YAML file. So you describe the individual containers you need, which images they need, how to build them, the environment variables, the names, etc. And you can spin up your whole stack with a single command.
Let's say I have a Rails application that uses PostgreSQL in development mode, as well as production. Would I need to or want to use Docker Compose to have a container for my Rails application and then also a container for my PostgreSQL instance?
In development, yes, definitely. There's this notion of separation of concerns where you want to, again, think about containers as processes, and you wouldn't want to give your Rails process the responsibility of starting your database, right? Those are totally different tasks, and you would start a process for your database, and you would start a process for your Rails front end, one for Sidekick, etc. And you do essentially the same thing with Docker Compose. You describe all these individual containers or processes that you need to get the application up and running. And then you interact and manage them through Docker Compose. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. And if I'm using Docker, so this is a separate kind of question. If I'm using Docker on a project, am I kind of like committed to using Docker all the time? Like I have to run, I don't know, like Docker run Rails console, Docker run Rails DB migrate, or is it possible to use Docker to like get the project set up for the first time? And then from then on, I don't have to use Docker.
Yes and no. So there, you can go, for example, halfway and say, oh, I want to run my dependencies like PostgreSQL and Redis inside of containers. But my main Rails app, I'm going to, you know, install the gems and run Rails server on my local machine. Still can save you a ton of time. But the containers, these images that you build, they are, you know, packaged. That means if you want to interact with your Rails application, it's containerized, you have to use containers, essentially. You can obviously like mix and match and say, oh, I'll run this container and then I run Rails also on my local machine, but it's probably just going to give you a headache and make things more complicated.
I imagine. Yeah, I wasn't imagining that the answer to that question was like, of course you can do that. So it makes sense to me that that's not really possible.
There is, however, one thing that I like to do, which is just a little bit of self-promotion. This other little tool I wrote called Donner, which is the German word for thunder. It's a tool that basically lets you abstract the way that you're using Docker, and it can set aliases in your shell so you can say Rails console, and it figures out that you're using Docker, and it runs this in a container for you, or RSpec or bundle and all these kind of things. So you don't have to think about whether, oh, do I use Docker? Do I use Docker Compose? What is the name of the service that it need to use to run RSpec, et cetera? You write it in a YAML file and this tool does it for you. So you can make your life a lot easier.
Okay. And I'll try to put links to these tools you're sharing in the show notes so people can get to those if they're interested in checking them out. Let me see. I'm sure I have. Oh yeah, I have another question that's kind of like a fringe question. That's just my own personal interest, and I have no idea if you even like have experience with this particular thing. But I'm curious. I've been told that most CI tools these days will do your CI server build using Docker, even if your application's not Dockerized. They will take your application and apparently somehow automatically Dockerize it for their purposes to make their infrastructure work easier, is my guess. Would you happen to know anything about how that all works?
So it's probably different from CI to CI provider, but the general idea is that in the past, they had to create this virtual machine for you, right? And then in this virtual machine, they would execute these scripts that you defined to install the dependencies and start Postgres, et cetera. But that has the overhead of dealing with this virtual machine. And instead of setting up a virtual machine, they just run a container for you. And they run a container that has, for example, the Ubuntu distribution that ships with the user space tools and directory layout, et cetera, from a Ubuntu distribution. And then they just execute your script in there that installs Ruby. And they potentially give you a way to say, I want a database. So instead of having to install Postgres manually somewhere, you can just tell them, and they're going to start a container running Postgres for you.
Okay, so I imagine it's a way for them to be more economical with their resource usage on their end.
Right, and also way faster because you don't have to set up a virtual machine, install an operating system, boot this operating system. It's just use already existing infrastructure to just start another process.
Yeah, okay. Part of why I was interested was I had been building this tool, which I decided not to build anymore because it's just too much work. But I have always kind of thought that it's like a little bit crazy that these, not crazy, but it's like, Okay, so these CI tools, they'll do like a whole build of a virtual machine and like install all your gems fresh every single time you run your test suite and stuff. And it just adds so much overhead to each test run. Why not have a why not have it where you have warm VMs already ready? So like maybe the first time that you like put your app on the CI service, it creates the VM, installs your gems and all that kind of stuff. But just like in your local development environment, you're not reinstalling all your gems each time you run any test. You're only reinstalling gems like if you change something. So why not make it be the same way on the CI server? So that was my idea. And I have this idea of like this massive parallelization where if you had 850 tests, there would be 850 VMs, each responsible for running one test. So it could be super fast. And I got a prototype working and everything. But then I was like, wait a second. If I'm going to do all of this programming work that's involved and try to do all the sales and marketing to get customers for this thing, that's just so much work. And it was like, I was doing this research. I was like looking to see what other similar things existed. And that was like the same day that GitHub came out with their GitHub Actions. And there was like this demo of like, here's how you can run your tests in parallel on GitHub Actions. And I'm like, man, I probably can't out-engineer GitHub. That's probably not a winning battle.
Probably going to be hard.
Yeah, so I decided not to do that. I still think it's a good idea, and somebody should do it that way, but not me.
Fair enough. But yeah, you could probably, instead of running virtual machines, running containers, and be really smart about how you provide gems to these containers so that they're pre-installed and stuff. Definitely options, and modern CI/CD tools allow you to use these concepts that Docker has within their CI pipeline so that you, for example, can cache gems or node modules or whatever really efficiently and build your images really efficiently to speed up the process. And then once the image is built, you can parallelize your tests onto different physical computers, and none of them have to install the gems again because they're packed into the container image, right? So there's definitely a lot of room for speed improvements using these technologies.
Yeah, I thought I was coming up with something totally novel and like really smart, but I probably wasn't doing anything all that crazily new. There's probably like this caching stuff you mentioned, it's probably similarly fast to what I was trying to do. Okay, so in a little bit, I'm going to have you share like where people can find all your stuff online and stuff like that as we head toward the end of the episode. But let's talk for a little bit just about learndocker.online and what kind of stuff is there and who it's for and all that kind of stuff. Do you want to tell us a little bit about learndocker.online?
Yeah, for sure. You can find the course at learndocker.online, as you might have guessed. And this course is essentially for people that want to get a deeper understanding of Docker and container technology in general and learn how to use these technologies in their day-to-day life, whether that's in production or for development. And it kind of approaches the whole topic from explaining you the, you know, 5-6 core concepts, letting you use them until you feel the pain, and then adding another tool and use that tool until you feel the pain, and then keep adding more and more. I'm a big believer of if you just add, you know, 10 tools you got to learn to solve a problem, you're probably not going to learn each of them really well or understand why you use them. And this notion of you do something until it doesn't scale anymore, and then you find solutions to solve this problem is usually a pretty good way to learn for me, and got pretty good feedback from the viewers that it also works for them. So
yeah, I completely agree, and that's how I tend to approach things. I'm like, here's this concept, let's apply this concept over and over or whatever, and then like oh, wait a second, we've been doing it this way, but it's starting to not work out all that great anymore. So let's step back and oh, there's this other thing. We can take advantage of this other technique or tool or whatever, and now let's go back and make things better using this new thing. Sounds like that's kind of the approach you take.
Right, totally. And it's, I think, 300-ish videos with a total of maybe 8 hours, I want to say, or 11 hours, something like that. So if you're crazy, you could probably get it in over a weekend, but I would not recommend that necessarily. But yeah, it covers all the aspects from developing the operations piece and also running applications in production. Not necessarily in a, this is the way you have to do it, but in a, hey, these are the concepts and the things you have to think about if you want to use containers in production. And here's an example of how it could look like.
Okay. And you also have given some workshops. I know that you were at Southeast Ruby in August because I don't know if you remember, but you and I met very briefly at the speaker's dinner.
We did. I was way too late. I think my flight was delayed.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Showed up at like 9 or 10 p.m. Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah. You missed out. That restaurant had some really good food.
It looked really good. Yeah, I was actually really excited.
But you're... okay, so you gave a workshop at that. Do you have any other workshops coming up or anything like that?
I don't have anything coming up. I gave this workshop a couple times this year at RailsConf and the German Ruby conference and then Southeast Ruby. And
wait, Germany has a Ruby conference?
Yeah, it's actually a really cool one. Ruby on Ice.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah. Did you go to that in 2019?
Yes. I went there, gave the workshop, and it was, I think, a 3-day single track conference. And really great talks, great audience, was a ton of fun. So if you're in Europe or in Germany, I would highly recommend checking it out next year.
Yeah, that sounds cool. What like how many people tend to go to it?
In the hundreds. I don't want to give a fixed number. It wasn't a huge conference. It was very, I want to say intimate. It was probably a little bit too big to be intimate still.
That's a good size, though. I'd like those smaller conferences, yeah. Like Southeast Ruby. I don't know how many people were there, maybe like a couple hundred.
Yeah,
that was a good size. I feel like that's like the perfect size. RailsConf, this year, 2019, was my first RailsConf. I thought it was way too big.
Yeah, you can't really talk to people or get to know them. And when these small conferences, you can talk to the speakers and really get into a conversation and then improve with the other people, especially if it's a multi-day conference. So, yeah.
It was really funny when I got to RailsConf. Like, I was there for like 20 minutes, and I ran into somebody I knew, and I was like, "Oh, hey, this is how it's going to be." You know, I can just find the people I know. And then, like, the whole rest of the time, like, there were so many people there who I knew, but I couldn't find them. Because there were like thousands of people. I don't know if there's thousands, but there was like over 1,000, I think.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, but it's good for what it is if you're into that kind of thing. But I think I prefer the smaller ones.
Same for me. Was still a good experience at RailsConf.
Yeah. Another small one I like is called Ruby Hack. I went to that one this year because I went to about 1,000 conferences this year. Because I recently started trying to speak at conferences, and I like applied to way too many, and I got accepted to way too many. But I went to Ruby Hack in April, and that was really cool. That was another small one. It happens in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm gonna check that out next year.
Yeah, that would be a good one for you specifically, because that's not too far from. Not too far of a flight from San Francisco, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Salt Lake City is like a new tech hub. People from California are like, hey, it's super expensive to live here. Let's go over to Utah where the cost of living is a little more reasonable.
Can't blame them. Can't blame them. It's a good idea.
All right, last question for you, Julian. Where can people find you online? Obviously, you shared learndocker.online, but if there's anything else you want to share, feel free.
Yeah, I occasionally write some stuff at codetails.io, and that's also a page where you can see where I'm going to speak next or give a workshop or talk to me. And I'm also in the process of putting this workshop into a kind of like small ebook or online website format, railswithdocker.com, and it's specifically targeted for Ruby/Rails developers that want to Dockerize their Rails environment for development, and kind of solve this pain point of, oh, it's so hard to get this application up and running on my machine or my new coworker's machine. And it teaches like all these tricks and tools I use on a daily basis. I do now develop 100% of my applications in containers, and I think I don't even have a working Ruby on my machine right now. It's broken. I think Readline got updated by Homebrew or whatever. Now IRB key app doesn't work anymore. Don't really care. Everything runs in containers. Yeah, check that out if you want. And feel free to reach out via email or Twitter or any other form of medium.
Sounds good. We'll link all this stuff up in the show notes. Julian, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Jason, thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
Likewise.